We're going to study tonight a tshuva of Rav Meir Ash, the Maram Ash. He was a Talmud of the Chasam Sofer. According to Wikipedia, at least, he was the leading authority in Hungary after the passing of the Chasam Sofer. His tshuvas are collected, at least some of them are collected, in the Imre Esh, his She'elos u'tshuvos. We're going to discuss a case tonight. I don't know that much about his biography. He was mid-19th century, middle of the 19th century. He was a leading Hungarian authority. We're going to discuss a tshuva of his tonight, which, interestingly enough, a very similar question is discussed by his great Rebbe, the Chasam Sofer, which he does not acknowledge, not sure why. The question was uniquely, not totally uniquely, but somewhat closely tied to the socio-political conditions of that time. The question deals with military service and the draft. Jews were getting drafted into the army of the European powers, probably the Austrian-Hungary at the time. He lived in Hungary. So, as we know from learning world history, American history, people who could afford it would often pay surrogates back then to serve in their stead. We learned about that in the Civil War. Americans used to do that sometimes. You have to either serve or pay someone to serve instead of you. This arrangement was prevalent too, he says, in Hungary, in Poland, and some of the Eastern European countries. And Jews used to do this. Jews used to find other Jews who would be willing for money to serve in place of the person who was drafted.
Other Jews, yes.
That's going to be the central point of this tshuva. They may have used non-Jews too, but the question here specifically was about Jews serving as surrogates for other Jews. The question was, is that allowed? Basically, there are going to be two issues he's going to discuss. One of them is the fact that you can't always keep the mitzvahs in the army. You have to Shabbos, kosher, and so on. So, and the other one, it has to do with danger. People go serve in the army, they are risking their lives. So, basically, his question essentially is, are you allowed to volunteer for the army? If I'm not drafted, am I allowed to volunteer, which... serving in the army, volunteering in the army may involve A, violating the necessity to violate the Torah, and B, putting myself in needless danger. And the question of the surrogate is kind of a secondary question. If I shouldn't be volunteering, maybe you shouldn't be hiring me to volunteer, because right now I'm not on the hook and you're going to cause me to volunteer. So if I shouldn't be volunteering, it's lefneiver basically. You shouldn't be hiring me to volunteer. But essentially his question is it permitted for a person to volunteer for the army? His basic answer is yes, as we'll see, and therefore, at least in this case, he was willing to allow it, and therefore he was willing to allow the hiring of one Jew as a surrogate for another Jew. We'll see his analysis, and we'll compare it to that of his Rebbe, the Chasam Sofer. And there is one further tshuva on this topic I have here of Rav David C. Hoffman, German posek from the late 20th century, who also deals with a very similar question. He wasn't dealing with surrogates, he was dealing with someone who was drafted. Is he obligated to try for an exemption? Did he try to go to his doctor? Because the army may involve Chil Shabbos and violation of mitzvahs, is a person who is drafted obligated to try to evade service in any way possible? Rav David C. Hoffman is going to agree largely with Imre Esh that it is permitted to serve in the army and therefore you are not obligated to evade service, and his logic is actually going to be rather similar. So let's look at the Imre Esh's analysis of the question.
What year is this? I'm sorry.
I don't know exactly what year it was. It probably would have been something around 1850 or so, give or take 30 years in either direction. I mean, he was mostly active, apparently, after the Chasam Sofer died, I think, so claims Wikipedia, which would have put him about somewhat later than 1840 or so. And so probably it was mid to late 19th century. He does note that this was peacetime. This was not a wartime draft. Not whether or not that impacts his argument, we'll see, but he does note this was a peacetime draft. So he begins the question by saying, I got the question, and his correspondent, I left out the part where he names who he was, wasn't anybody I recognized. His correspondent was troubled. The long-standing practice here in Hungary, in the presence of Gedolei Yisrael, that people who were drafted for the army, they would find his amtsulim sogever, they would strive mightily to find someone, a shabadritzi kesef, for pay, for money, yachbat v'yirtzol leches alatzava, who'll serve in your stead. Ulfia Nira, apparently he's heard, Medina's Poland also, they do the same thing, if they can manage it. Nobody objects. None of the rabbis have any problem with this arrangement. So what's the story? What's the story with this practice? Are you allowed to hire somebody else to serve in your stead? And as we've explained, the basic question is, are they allowed to volunteer in the first place to serve if they're not being drafted? And if they wouldn't be, then you might not be allowed to hire them, but at least in his understanding. But he's basically going to argue that they are permitted to volunteer, and therefore you are permitted to hire them. He adds a kind of personal or procedural note. He says, "Lo achached." I'll tell you the truth. He says, "I really didn't want to answer your question." Doesn't say why exactly, but lo hayablibi lahashem umalze. I wasn't really in the mood to answer your question. Maybe it was sensitive. All the shuvas on this topic seem to have involved political sensitivities. However, he says, Lasharisi, I think that stands for Motzik Shavzeh, the messenger, the courier who was carrying the question and the response back and forth. He told me, your messenger told me, ki bikesh malas kvo terasim imenu ki yira lahasik tshuva. The messenger told me that you had charged him with getting an answer from me. Make sure he answers you. Don't come back empty-handed. V'chashashti, I was worried, says the Maramash, ki ulay maniyaf tshuvasi pogim lechvo debeni Motzik Shavzeh. Maybe if I don't answer you, then that'll be a slight. That'll be, you'll be denigrated in his eyes. That, oh, you know, he specifically asked for an answer, and the Maramash turned him away. He must not be a VIP. Therefore, in order that you not be humiliated like that, I feel compelled to answer you. A common refrain we find in Tshuvas, I'm so busy, the yeshiva's man is starting, I'm busy with other things, I'm really very busy, I don't want to answer your question, but to avoid offending you, to avoid humiliating you in the eyes of your messenger, I'm going to have to answer you despite the fact that I don't really want to do that. Now, we are lucky, we have this fascinating Tshuva we're going to see now, which we wouldn't have if not for these considerations, but be that as it may, we are zocha to have this interesting Tshuva. So the Maramash writes, Phineas Dainty Nered de Heter Gomer Mitzvah Lasos Kein. This practice of hiring surrogates is permitted, and it's a mitzvah to do this. Kizula Zei Efshir Lasos Beinian Shiato Ben Hashem Vanashim. There is no other way to satisfactorily resolve the situation. He's going to use language like this several times, that it's important to use the system of the hiring of surrogates because otherwise things would be in a bad state. He doesn't really explain what he means. Likely what he's referring to is that we know from the Cantonists in Russia, we know that when they had drafts like this, and the drafts weren't limited to the person like ours are today, when today you get drafted, you serve. There's no playing games. But when the system was as it was back then, when the government only really cared about a quota, they didn't really care who served, the system lay open to terrible abuse. The rich, the powerful, would be able to seize and kidnap the poor, the friendless, the unprotected, and turn them over to fill the quotas. This led to terrible abuses. It led to terrible enmity and bitterness within the community. The rich were blamed. The rabbis were blamed. Anyone in power was blamed. So without some kind of regular satisfactory arrangement of who would serve, the things would be open to terrible machlokas and terrible abuse, terrible chilul Hashem. So presumably he means something like that, that it's important that we find some heter, some system where we can satisfy the government's quotas, and therefore if we can justify this, it's good that we'll be able to do this, because otherwise we would be in big trouble. But barring those kind of policy considerations, now let's get down to his actual analysis. He says, "Ain't a dumb Mishnah saying." The Mishnah says that if the Akum, if the Goyim, if the enemy tell us, turn over one of your men to us, we don't do that. The Alim through Nefesh Mi Yisrael, that we don't turn over anyone to the enemy. So he says, not a problem. There we're talking about the enemy wants someone to kill, to punish, to abuse right away. We don't turn people over to the enemy with their permission, without their permission. We don't cooperate to demands for victims, sacrifices. We don't do that. He says, however, our case is not like that. Our case does not involve any victimization, he says. Lomi boi be'eth shalom. Certainly in peacetime, kizmaneinu, the time in which this discussion was occurring apparently was peacetime. B'chesed Hashem, thank God it's peacetime now. D'vadei ein kam beis mechush. There's nothing to worry about. Arayim machrichin osim klal, lavaras das Torah kedosha. No one is being compelled to violate the Torah. Hein ba'achila. There's no issue of tray food. Shem yirtzish lo lechel mipas bagam v'yein mishteyem. These phrases, pas bagam, yein mishteyem, are from Daniel, I think, or from Chanai Mishal Mazaria. means tray food. The government does not care what you want to eat. If you want to avoid the tray food and either eat your vegetables or bring your own food or whatever it is, nobody cares. The government does not care that you eat its government-issue rations. Eat whatever you want. So the case of the Mishnah, give us somebody, we'll kill him, we'll rape him, we'll rape her, we'll do whatever we want. That you can't do. But here, what are they asking for? They're asking for service. Service doesn't necessarily involve any violation of Torah law. You can eat kosher food and so on. Ein machriach asoklal. Nobody cares. Nobody compels you to violate the Torah. Ein shum iser shum ochra. What he understood of army service in Austria-Hungary was there is no prohibition that you generally have to violate. Army service is completely compatible with an orthodox observant lifestyle. Rak, he says, he does concede, l'fa'amim, muchrach aleches chutz l'tchum. Sometimes on Shabbos, they set you up on a march, you will have to, and you're going to march outside the city, that you're going to have to go somewhere, violate the law of tchum. V'gam, ulai lisa, zayin, v'chafetzvim, v'shabbos. Sometimes they're going to make you carry weapons and your kit, your gear, on Shabbos. So you may have to violate either the laws of tchum or the laws of carrying. However, he says, not a problem. Don't worry about it. Why not? Shulchan Aruch Pas, like he brings a famous halacha. Shulchan Aruch, he's going to get into the next paragraph, he's going to get into the Talmudic background for this, but first he brings what the Shulchan Aruch actually rules. B'pshitas, Baruch Hayim, Simen Reishon, Chesiv, Dalad, B'yotz Mashiach of the Midbar. You have Jews who are joining a caravan. They're going to be traveling through the desert. V'akol Yodim, Shentrikim, L'chalas, HaShabbos. The caravan will have to violate Shabbos. They're not going to stop for you on Shabbos. And if you drop out, you're going to be stuck and be in danger by yourself in the desert. So if you join that caravan, it's true. One Shabbos, if you're in the caravan and now it's Shabbos, you have to go with them. It's pikuach nefesh. There's a song I used to hear when I was a kid about a Jew. It's a midrash, I think, or a famous story about a midrash who... And a fellow, a tzaddik, who agreed to go with the caravan, and they promised him they would stop on Shabbos, and they didn't, and he said, I'm not going further, and they said, you're crazy, he said, it's important, it's Shabbos, and a lion came, and the lion stayed with him all Shabbos, and guarded him from the bandits, and then I think he rode the lion back to join them after Shabbos. So there are posts who say that to Midas Hasidus, to do that, to avoid the Michal Shabbos, but Nikra Din, we pass in the Shulchan Aruch, you do not have to do that. Certainly, if you made a good faith effort to avoid being Michal Shabbos, and you had a commitment that you wouldn't have to, and now you're stuck, you could be Michal Shabbos, but more than that, the halacha is, you're allowed to join a caravan l'chatchila, even if you know that you will have to Michal Shabbos, as long as the one condition the Shulchan Aruch gives is that you have to embark on your journey on Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday. Yom Aleph, Beis, Gimel, not Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. The rule is, we find in various places in Halacha, the latter 3 days of the week are considered the entrance to Shabbos, the introduction to the next Shabbos. The first 3 days of the week are considered, in some sense, the follow-up to the past Shabbos, even though it's true, we do count in Jewish calendar, Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, starting from Sunday, the week really starts from Sunday, but in a certain sense, the 3 days before Shabbos are considered kind of a special lead-up to Shabbos, so you shouldn't embark on a journey which will likely or certainly involve Chil Shabbos on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but you are allowed to on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. This is the opinion, he says, of the Rivash and the Tashbats and so on. As we'll see later, the Balamid Lahoel of David Tzvi Hoffman also bases his permissive ruling on serving in the army on this type of logic. He goes one step further and says that even embarking on a journey on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, which will involve Chil Shabbos' mutter if there's a mitzvah involved. And in his case, Rav Hoffman felt there was a mitzvah involved. He felt that if Jews would wholesale be required to evade army service, it would create a great Chil Hashem, so that itself is a mitzvah. The standard of mitzvah in this context is fairly low. Rabbeinu Tam, I think, said even earning a living is considered a mitzvah for these purposes. Earning an honest living is an important thing a Jew needs to do. So traveling on business is mutter, even if it will involve Chil Shabbos, even if it's within three days of Shabbos. Al-Kalparam, the Imriash says that certainly if you leave on Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday, it is certainly mutter that you're not mechuyev to worry about Shabbos that far in advance. Even if you know your itinerary and you know that there will likely, the journey will extend over 3 weeks and it will take place over a couple of Shabbosos and there will be Chil Shabbos, it doesn't matter. As long as you're starting the journey early enough in the week, you're allowed to do that. It doesn't matter that there will be Vadeh Chil Shabbos. It's a big chiddush, but that's halacha. That's Alach and Shulchan Aruch.
Is it specifically because the Malacha is the Tichum and the Carrying?
No, it applies. It's clear in the Shulchan Aruch. It applies to any malacha. They talk about having to make, I think, tie knots for the ship, the rigging, or whatever it was. And they talk, I think, even about malacha deraisa, standard malachas, regular lamentas malachas, not just carrying and tchum. In his particular case, it was relevant to tchum and carrying, but I'm pretty sure it applies to any malacha.
So the analog here is joining the army on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
I was wondering about that. He doesn't come make this point explicitly. He says
something that a non-Jew cooked, even
he reads the next paragraph. He kind of again talks on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. I'm not sure if he means the sign up has to be on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, or he just means that it won't happen every Shabbos, so it's ready a few weeks in advance. I wasn't sure exactly what he meant, right? Whether he's actually stipulating, as I said, Rav Hachman is going to say that even signing up on Erev Shabbos is mutter because it's a mitzvah. He's not going with that, so right. I'm not sure if he means to say you have to be medactic to sign up only on only early in the week. So I'm not really sure about that. He goes on. He says Mavur Midivrayim. V'lamduhu, the source for these poskim, these late Rishonim, the Rivash, the Tashbat, were 14th or 15th century Rishonim, their source was a Raza, Rabbein Ezrachi Alevi, the Balamar, a relatively early Rishon, the Perusho Laha Dein Mafligin Besvina, Dein Tsarin El Ayara. So the Gemara has a very unclear statement about how you're allowed to take a ship vote, you're allowed to embark on a sea voyage Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, not Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Talmud doesn't really explain so clearly why. There are about a half dozen or eight different shittos in the Rishonim of what the issue is. We're afraid if you leave too close to Shabbos, you won't have proper food, you won't have things set up for you when you get there if you're leaving that late in the week. We're worried about seasickness. If you leave early in the week, your stomach will have time to get used to the sea and you'll be more comfortable on Shabbos. All kinds of different shittas in the Rishonim, but one shita of the Balamar, which is the one accepted in Shulchan Aruch, is this one, that either way, exactly the same thing is going to happen. It's going to end in Chilul Shabbos, but for halachic reasons, that's mutter if the voyage begins on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and it's not mutter if the voyage begins too close to Shabbos. So he says, and the same thing with Tzaren al-Hayaras, embarking on a discretionary military campaign against the city, which is going to take a few days. And you're going to have to Mechal Shabbos while you're in the field, while you're campaigning. You're going to have to Mechal Shabbos for Pekuah Nefesh reasons. So again, we're not talking about a case where it's Mechal Mitzvah and you have to do it to save lives. You do whatever you have to then in that case. But in a case where it's discretionary, you're not supposed to start on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday if it will involve Chilul Shabbos. You are allowed to start on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And that's the rule. Even though it will involve Chilul Shabbos with the same high probability or the same certainty, it's mutter if you're embarking early in the week. Before me, Devarim Sham, the reason is Kiman Dehanoch Kimel Yom Rishonim Shal Shavua Lav Kame Shabbat Mikri. For halachic purposes, we don't count Sunday, Monday, Tuesday as Kame Shabbos. It's not considered before the next Shabbos. It's considered post the previous Shabbos. Harayena Kamasim Chalas Shabbos. Halacha doesn't term this setting out with an intention to violate Shabbos. But v'machrikak b'Shabbos yitzarach ulekas chutz l'tzchum. If afterward you're going to find yourself in a situation where you have to go chutz l'tzchum ulchal Shabbos b'sham halachas, you're going to have to do either tchum or chil Shabbos or other malachas, carry or anything else, then pikuach nefesh dalcho. So at that point you will be pikuach nefesh. And now he concludes the analogy by bringing it back to the case of the signing up for the army, of enlisting in the army. He says, me'ata elu aholchem latzava em yavam nesiyasim b'Shabbos kodesh. Once you've signed up to the army, if you're campaigning or if you're en route and they tell you, now you have to go here, or it's pikuach nefesh. I don't know if he means pikuach nefesh from the enemy, that if you don't fight, you know, you'll be overrun, or pikuach nefesh from your side, that if you don't do what they tell you to do, you'll be shot as a deserter or something. But whatever it is, it'll be pikuach nefesh. Delchos, no problem. And ein b'halichas na'atzal tzava shum chashash yisr. We don't have to worry about signing up now, but enlisting now, because of this cheat of the rivash and the tashbats that we pass. Like, again, whether he means dafka signing up, make sure you do it on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, or not, but I'll call upon him. That's the application of this heter. You can sign up and join. You don't have to worry about what is going to happen later on. If you'll be careful to avoid any surim where you have a choice, it's a manafshach. Where it is pikuach nefesh, it's mutter. Where you have the choice, you just won't do it. If you won't have to do any Shabbos violations, you can even sign up on Erev Shabbos. And if after, I guess he means, right, if you're going to have to sign up, if you're going to have to do Mechal Shabbos, you should do it early in the week. If you're not going to have to do Mechal Shabbos, you can even do it on Erev Shabbos. Even if you know that this volunteer is likely to be Mechal Shabbos when he's in the army, that's not on you. That's not your fault. what you're asking him to do does not involve Chil Shabbos. You don't have to worry about that. It's his choice if he chooses to Michal Shabbos in a matter of discretion. Lola's an iskru. I didn't ask you to do that. I'm not paying you to do that. Your decision. It's a great mitzvah to hire surrogates. Not to tell them they should just grab whoever they want. Chas v'shalom. Again, he treats this idea that they would just be free to seize whoever they want as chas v'shalom. Doesn't explain why. Perhaps what I said before, he's worried about abuse of the system by the powerful. But anyway, because it's mutter, because of this argument, it's a mitzvah to participate in the system of hiring surrogates, because that's the way that things will be resolved most satisfactorily and will not lead to the unacceptable results of letting them grab whoever they want. Now, this point he's making, that even if they will be Bechal Shabbos by choice, they will eat treif by choice, it's not your fault.
Yes,
it's a legalistic argument. In terms of, it feels a little wrong somehow. If I know the temptations will be so high that the tray food will be hot and fresh and fresh meat and his army rations, I don't know if they're famous for being delicious, but they're at least they'll be eating meat or whatever they are. And his other choice is to eat vegetables and to eat stale bread or vegetables. Putting him in that position, telling him don't eat whatever you don't have to eat, survive on bread and half rotted tomatoes. I mean, it seems a little bit that it doesn't seem so appropriate to put somebody in that situation, even if, yes, technically he should make the right call and eat the unpalatable food and not eat the treif. I still think you have some moral responsibility for doing that, for placing him in that kind of temptation. I guess, I don't know how good the army food was. Maybe they were also giving him just pretty unappetizing stuff, so there wouldn't really be any great temptation to eat the treif food. I mean, Shabbos also. He doesn't have to, he should only march when they make him, and he shouldn't do anything he doesn't have to do, and he shouldn't participate in any leisure activities or anything. Yeah, I guess that's what he feels. That's not your responsibility. I'm paying you to do whatever is compatible with being a religious Jew, which is doable. I don't know how convenient it was, but it was doable, apparently, he feels, what he knew of the conditions in the army. Whatever you choose to do is not my achrayas.
Is it possible there's a subtext here that the Shomer Shabbos can be hiring non-Shomer Shabbos people, of which they were already hungry in the mid-19th century?
Yeah, so let's
case, you don't really, in a sense, in theory you could, but really, you're in Chazer Shrek for home anyway, so what do I care when you're there?
Yeah, so.
But foods that are part of a bread meal.
Yes, so it seems that that's probably part of the subtext. The. If you look at the Chasam Sofer on the next page, the last paragraph of his tshuva, he also talks about surrogates. He says, the rest of the tshuva is talking about what should you do, how should the community figure out who should be required to serve different possibilities. And at the end, he brings up the possibility of surrogates. So he says, Ach mashin nimtzayim atel lemeos. We find hundreds of people who sell themselves, who go for being a soldier, mercenaries essentially. Not mercenaries, they're serving in the nation's army, but they're, right, I guess, sort of mercenaries. They're being paid by people who are drafted to serve in their stead. Unlike the Maramash, who felt these people, at least in principle, it's a perfectly legitimate thing to do, to start to enlist in the army and to only do what you have to do and to avoid whatever you don't have to do. That's perfectly compatible with religious observance. Chasam Sofer takes a diametrically opposite position and says, Hey, Magri Mikulu, these guys are the worst, the very worst, these mercenaries, these volunteers. Why? They are voluntarily choosing, they're not being drafted, they're voluntarily choosing to be Michal Shabbos and to eat treif. So the Maramash said that's not true, because the Chil Shabbos is fine based on the precedent of embarking on a sea voyage or embarking on a military campaign early in the week, and Isurim also, whatever you have to eat, whatever you don't have to eat. These people, Chasam Sofer, doesn't know anything about this. He thinks this is a deliberate attempt, a deliberate choice to violate the Torah. Mikal Makom, he says, Kimin Deshrichi Tuva, V'lovi Ketrei Rei Nari, there are many people who would be happy to hire them as surrogates. You're not the only option he has. If you don't engage his services, he'll find someone else to pay him to serve in their stead. Their decision not care at all about violating the Torah serves as a hetzer for us. We can hire them. He also attests, just as his student, Amar Mashu, this is widespread in our region, he says. This is common practice. Vukain Bechiris Rav Miyuto. Chasam Sofer is very grudging about this. He doesn't like this idea. He thinks there are terrible people who are doing this, but They're going to do it anyway. Might as well. We should hire them to get out of the problem and find a solution for us. So yeah, so probably these people were not that religious to begin with. It's not so clear whether these were people who, if they stayed home, they would be keeping Shabbos. Now they're going out as a soldier, they won't be, or they just were interested in keeping Shabbos. But yeah, it's certainly possible that the people here who were volunteering as surrogates weren't that religious to begin with. The Mariash is claiming that in principle, at least, they could be observant. Even if they will have to Mechallel Shabbos, that's acceptable.
Does it make it better? I mean, who cares if they're religious or not? I mean, you can't make them do Averas.
Right. So the truth is that's a complicated question. When you deal with Lifnei Iver and the related prohibitions of Lifnei Iver, Masei Avodah Zarah, Avera, there are cases where we're more lenient if they do Averas anyway. Certainly, the rabbinic form of Lifnei Iver, Masei Avodah Zarah, Avera, there are Shittas who say if he's a Mumer anyway and he's a Rasha, he doesn't care about doing Averas, then we're not Machuyev to help him avoid them. We can even provide an opportunity. So there are those who say that when we're dealing with the Mumer, it doesn't matter anymore. There's a lot of discussion. We covered this actually here in Shifty a little while back. There is a lot of discussion about, Poskim discuss things like, can you rent, let's say, commercial premises to someone who's going to run his business on Shabbos? Can you, if you own a restaurant, can you provide food to clients, to customers, we're not making brachas, not washing tefillos yadayim? And it's a big issue, and it's a poskim debate this at length, whether there's a heter to do this. Some poskim do indeed say that if he's just mechallel Shabbos anyway, if he's not religious, then you don't have to try to facilitate any more marginal observances anyway, wholly not religious. Most poskim are machmer, they say it's not. There is no just general heter to just provide someone who's not religious with more opportunities to mechallel Shabbos. I mentioned the tshuva of Rabbi Chaim Berlin, the son of an Nitziv, who talked about a case about someone needed medical treatment on Shabbos. The treatment itself didn't necessarily involve any chillul Shabbos, and there was no sakana involved, just ordinary illness, no danger. He wanted to see a doctor, and he was going to see a non-religious doctor, and he was afraid, this is a very common question, he was afraid the doctor would write his notes, would write non-medically necessary things. He wasn't picking up nefesh in the first place, and these things weren't necessary. He actually is very unhappy with this. He says he's not religious, that's his problem. You shouldn't be providing him more opportunities, like you were saying, more opportunities to Mechallel Shabbos. Yeah, so whether it would matter that these people were not religious is an interesting question. Earlier in the Tshuva of the Chasam Sofer, before he gets into his question of surrogacy, he deals with the question of, does the community have the right to play God and say, if we have to fill a quota of 50 people, we're going to take these kids who are not religious anyway and toss them into the army. The Chasam Sofer has a fiery denunciation of that. He says, basically, Chas V'Shalom, he says that, if you look at the second to last paragraph, he says, Lanas Anoshim Bli Goral, to force people without at least a fair random procedure, and say they're Pochim Marekim, they're worthless, they're kids at risk, they're kids of the streets, whatever it is, let's just hand them over to the government for the army service. Afilu Megali Arayas, Mechallel Shabbos, even if they are guilty of immoral conduct, even if they're Mechallel Shabbos, which is about as bad as it gets in the halachic hierarchy. Says the Chasam Sofer, Be'enai, in my opinion, someone who decides to turn them over because they're worthless anyway, such a person is Gonev Nefesh Mecharo. He has the status of a kidnapper who steals. It's one of the Ten Commandments. It's the story of the Sarugim Malchus. It's about as bad as it gets in Judaism. Turning over someone, seizing somebody against his will, and turning him over to the government is kidnapping, he says. Who are you to play God? Who are you to decide that he deserves to have to serve in the army more than your child? Since the government's draft applies equally to all of them, he says, and so on and so on. He says, on the contrary, he says he can actually argue the reverse. He says, Mikolshkein, most, he says, Rav Amar Yoser, turning these kids over is even worse, he says. Kiatovim Ananasim, the people who are Erlach and are observant, if they have to go to the army, fine. Whatever they have to do, they'll do, as we saw in the Maramash, and whatever they don't have to do, they won't do. So, okay, so their doing is not so bad. They'll be Mechallel Shabbos Machmas Onus. Nope. He says it'll only happen occasionally. Le'itim Rechokim, as the Maramash said, you can get away with most of your army service without doing any real Chil Shabbos, generally. And when you have to do it, it's Mutter, because Bikoch Nefesh. Ve'elu, these kids who are not so observant, Yasi Baratzen, they'll do it b'mezid. Vanu Madchem Achra Nofel, just because they're not religious, we should be providing them more opportunity to sin and to assimilate. Chas V'Shalom. So the Chantzofer actually argues that to turn them over involuntarily, despite the fact that they're not religious and not observant, is a terrible, terrible thing. However, to hire them as surrogates, even though they're doing wrong, that he's willing to accept. If it's voluntary, paying them to do it, that you can accept, that you can ask them to do if they're willing to do it. That's Baruch HaRavah Miyuto, that you can ask them to do it. So both the Maharamash and the Chasam Sofer agree that you're allowed to hire surrogates, but there's a vast difference in how they express the dispensation. The Maharamash understands the surrogate himself, what he's doing is in principle fine. As long as he does not Makal Shabbos more than he needs to, that's perfectly okay. And if they choose to do more, that's their problem, but that's nothing to do with you. Chasam Sofer says the surrogates who are volunteering are doing terrible averis, they're Masnil Makal Shabbos. Nevertheless, they're going to do it anyway, so you might as well be the one to hire. So, Maharamash goes on, returning to his tshuva, though. He goes on. Now he discusses the second question. He says, good, so we've taken care of the problem that in the army you may have to violate Shabbos. The answer is you generally don't, and when you don't have to, you won't, and when you do, it's mutter, so that's not a problem. Now he has a new issue. Serving in the army is dangerous. Soldiers get killed. Occupational hazard of being a soldier. So, how can you volunteer for a career, for a job, which involves high risk to life and limb? So in the third to last paragraph of the Shuvah, he says, the Afgam be'esam l'chama, even if it's wartime. Earlier he said it's peacetime. You don't even have to worry about death. But even if it's wartime, he says, someone who serves as a soldier, who volunteers as a soldier, is not considered to be suicidal. You're not throwing away your life. Dim Kane, if this were true, if serving as a soldier would be considered suicidal, the whole idea of a war of discretion, a war of choice, would be considered unacceptable self-endangerment. The famous pasuk, the Torah says, it is a halachic obligation to avoid unnecessary self-endangerment. So if wars of choice were prohibited as unacceptable risk to life, they would be aser. And we know, Adonenu David HaMelech Alav HaShalom, Marvel Mechemes Rishus, he brings various technical arguments that some of David's campaigns were not necessary. Some of them were obviously for the security of Israel, the people in the land. But some of them, he argues, based on traditional sources, were voluntary, were just to... For economic reasons, or I don't forget the detail, but was basically what we call wars of choice. Today, we consider discretionary wars as being unthinkable. Bush is accused of blood for oil, as if everyone agrees that everyone agrees. I had a friend who used to complain cynically, used to say, the blood for oil, you know, if we give blood, at least we should get the oil. Why are the gas prices still so high? But today we argue that we don't throw away blood for oil. We argue that it's national security and it's preserved the national order and so on, the international order and so on, freedom of the seas and everything. But back then, the halachic tradition, and this is actually a topic for another day, but the halachic tradition, according to many poskim, actually considers discretionary wars as legitimate, even though on the one hand it's kind of paradoxical. On the one hand, we always talk about how Judaism places. Ascribes infinite value to life, and life is more important than everything, and Chil Shabbos, and everything is done to save life. Nevertheless, discretionary wars are permitted, despite the fact that we're not Samech al Neis, despite the fact that Rambam and others say people die in wars, and statistically, you have to assume that if you engage in a military campaign, people are going to die. Nevertheless, even a discretionary war is considered legitimate. And that's it's a startling point, and he says it remarkably boldly. He argues that Mohammed Rishus is a legitimate policy for a nation state to take. There's an interesting tshuva I once saw by Rabbi Yeshua Ehrenberg, Menachem Yeshua Ehrenberg, a leading posek in Eretz Israel in the mid-20th century. So in the 80s or so, he was writing about land for peace, and there was a lot of controversy among religious authorities whether giving up land for peace is appropriate or not. So some people argued pikuach nefesh. If we stipulate that giving up land will create more peace, now you can argue the fact, but separate question. But if we assume arguendo that giving up land will create more peace and fewer people would die, so maybe it's pikuach nefesh. And Eretz Yisrael is a very important mitzvah, but who says it's doch pikuach nefesh? So Rav Ehrenberg says, it's the wrong way to look at it. It doesn't work like that. It's true that when you're dealing with individual decisions, a person's deciding what to do, it's true that save his life, do whatever you can, all mitzvahs in the Torah except the three cardinal sins are nidcheh for pikuach nefesh. However, he says, when you're dealing with national policy, when you're dealing with war and the policies of nation states, war and peace, he says, there's an entirely different calculus. We don't make decisions as state policy based on individual pikuach nefesh for individual citizens. Insofar as keeping territory, keeping Eretz Yisrael is an important national goal, the fact that statistically we may expect some people will die for it doesn't automatically invalidate the policy. So even if we were to assume that the policy of retaining territory will result with some degree of probability in more Jewish deaths, it doesn't necessarily matter. Now, some poskim have argued that Melchemes Rishus is limited to the Urim V'Tumim. That it's true in biblical times, in David HaMelech, First Temple, Second Temple. Well, Second Temple, there was no Urim V'Tumim, but most of the First Temple, it's true that in the time of the Bible, they did engage in Melchemes Rishus. However, the Rambam says it's done by Urim V'Tumim. They would ask the Kohen, shall we go? Like we find stories in Tanakh. They said, shall we campaign against so-and-so? Shall we engage him in battle? And the answer was yes or no. And will you win? Will you lose? The right way to ask, the Talmud says. It is true that some of the great battles of Melchemes and Tanakh were done via Urim V'Tumim. However, Maram Hash, and again, in a very bold, very provocative statement, says, not required, not essential. Yes, of course, if you have Urim V'Tumim, you should certainly consult it. However, he says, Mashram in Astam, in the second to last paragraph, Al Pi She'ein Urim V'Tumim, called Bayesheni. The example is Bayesheni. Bayesheni, he says, there was no Urim V'Tumim. There's a famous Machlokas Rambam and Ravid. Some say that there were Urim V'Tumim because they were part of the Big Day Kahuna, but they didn't function. They didn't have their oracular function of telling God's will. Some say there were no Urim V'Tumim, but be that as it may, they weren't functional one way or another. They weren't operational. And still, even when there was a Urim V'Tumim, there was still Sakana, he says. The Chem is Man Bayesheni, he says. The Malchim Beis Chashmonai, he still had Melchema L'Rvach. I don't know, he knows that. Much of their wars were against the enemy oppressor, but the oppressive enemy. But he assumes they engaged in Melchemes Rishus too, even though they were righteous and did the right thing. So his conclusion is that a nation state is permitted to engage, a nation state is a modern term, obviously, but a sovereign power is permitted to engage in discretionary war, not considered murder or suicide, not considered unacceptable risk of life. War as a tool to further state policy is legitimate, and therefore there's no issue of pikuach nefesh. As I said, many contemporary writers and other posts have pushed back and said, no, only Urim V'Tumim. I think it might have been Rabbi Bleif's essay similar essays by contemporaries in the Nuclear War book. In the Amnesiad book, they've said Melchemes Rishus is limited to cases of Urim V'Tumim. There are people who say that, but the Ramash held that you don't need Urim V'Tumim. And also implicit in what he's saying is that this is not a prerogative that is limited to Jewish sovereigns. This was the Austria-Hungarian Empire or something, the Polish kings and so on. Even they're allowed to engage in Melchemes Rishus. And they're not Jewish, they don't have Urim V'Tumim, they don't have Nevi'im, and Afal Bekein, it's Mutter. And therefore, since they're engaging in military operations is legitimate and permitted, therefore you volunteering to serve in such an army is okay. So that's his conclusion. And then in the very last paragraph, he says one last thing. He says, Limser Bal Karcho, which is the subject of the beginning of the Tshuva and the Chasam Sofer, to force people into service, to say, I don't want to serve. Here, you serve, and to hand them over to the enemy. Vadaiki Yisr Chomerhu, that certainly is a terrible sin, he says. He brings an earlier Tshuva of the Rabbi Shmuel Landau, Nodav Yehuda's son, who wrote that already in the Nodav Yehuda. However, he says, to hire them, he says, once again, he says, Ki even Efshir Limser Adarvel and Nachrim, we can't let them choose. And here he gives another reason why we can't let them choose. I've been saying because it's going to lead to abuse by the powerful. He gives a different reason. He says, Ki Yikhu Gamlam De Torah, Torah Hashem. If we let them choose, they're going to draft yeshiva students. Hashem Ren Hadin Enalam Ol Hazet. The Chasam Sofer, his rabbi, also talks about this at length, that the problem with letting them pick, or one problem is that Talmidei Chacham are not liable for the draft. This is based on Talmudic sources. I spoke about this a month or two ago. And according to Halacha, Talmidei Chacham are exempt from drafts by Jewish governments, by non-Jewish governments. So in order to protect the Talmidei Chacham, the yeshiva students, from serving, he says, we have to make sure that we can find some system fulfilling the quotas. Im Kane, he says, his bottom line is, the way he began, he reiterates several times throughout the Tshuva, Haschirus, Lahamr, Anashim, Midaiton, hiring surrogates as long as it's voluntary, Mutter, Mitzvah, Lafini, Esdaiti. Once it's Mutter, it's actually a mitzvah for the reasons he's given to avoid the less tolerable system of them taking whoever they want. It is permitted and even a mitzvah to hire surrogates. That is his conclusion. And it's also the somewhat less enthusiastic and more grudging conclusion of his Rebbe, the Chasam Sofer. Just a couple of words on the Rav Dovitzi Hoffman's tshuva. His tshuva, so he was a German. He was already in what we can roughly, broadly speaking, call the Torim Derech Eretz school, the whole German culture. They had a much more favorable and Western attitude toward governments and toward secular society than their more Eastern European brethren did. Not that anything that Aram Ash said was particularly rude or disrespectful to the government, but Dovitzi Hoffman begins his tshuva even in a much more modern and Western kind of way. He says, first he gives you a little introduction. Tshuva zos kasavti, I've written this, laharas ba'alil, shal pi dina de shas, even according to Dina of Shas and Poskim, Anu Mechuyavim Lishmar Pimelach, we are obligated to obey the king, B'chukei Medina, Be'eretz Ashkenaz, and the law in Germany. Now, some Poskim write this just as a cover, as a kind of sap for the censors. He, I think, meant it. I can't prove it, but his overall tenor of his thought indicates, I think, he actually did believe this, that he did feel that that civic duty was something recognized by the Torah. So the question was, he wasn't dealing with surrogacy. He was just dealing with someone who was being drafted for the army, and he had some way of avoiding it, whether it was actually by illegal draft evasion, whether it was by some other way he could somehow technically get out of service. But he wanted to know, I've been drafted. I know if I have to serve in the army, I will be forced to be Mechal Shabbos. So the conservator says, yeah, so certainly you shouldn't volunteer. Maybe if you shouldn't volunteer, you should even try to get out of the army service if you can. Anyway, you can. That was his question. Asher, Barov Toshavas HaYehudim, most areas in which Jews reside, Mital HaMelech HaMedina, the law is this universal draft. Kol Ish, universal service. Kol Ish Asher Ubari, anyone who's healthy, there are always medical deferments and medical exemptions, but anyone who's healthy, Ulam Tzarech Likanes El Chel HaMulchama, you have to do some army service. Again, peacetime this was, I think. Lamalos Tzvaosham, you have to serve your time there. Shana, Shnasayim, Shalosh Shanim, 1, 2, or 3 years. And while you're there, while you're there, you're going to be forced to Mechal Shabbos and Yom Tov. So the question was, a God-fearing, observant Jew, is he obligated to Lavid Kol Mai De'efsher? Again, he's carefully silent about what Kol Mai De'efsher is. What was the guy proposing doing to get out of service? Illegal? How illegal was it? Doesn't say. You have to do whatever you can to evade serving in the army. And Adonis Yafin begins with a very striking introduction. He writes, Sheilig Dola Shalta, a great question, he says, Tzricha Iyun Rav, Hilhoshival Alpidina, the Shah's Apostle Lachud. You have to be very careful, he says, be very careful to make sure that our answer is strictly in accordance with black letter law, with what Halacha actually says. We don't want to answer based on our gut feeling or our emotions or our kind of intuitive sense of right and wrong. We want to answer according to rigorous arguments from Shas and Poskim. Valkain Amarti, therefore I'm announcing, he says, I'm not just going to follow wherever my heart points me to. I don't know what exactly he's warning you about here. Does he mean that instinctively we might feel a Western civic duty, but we have to see if it's really mutter? Does he mean the other direction we might feel? Of course you should not be Mechal Shabbos, but we have to see whether the halakha really requires that. I'm not sure which way he felt a person might be tempted to jump to a conclusion wrongly, but whatever the fallacious position might be, his conclusion is very much in line with the position taken by the Maharam Ash. He brings the same sugya about embarking on journeys before Shabbos, which will result in Chil Shabbos. And he says, then he makes the point I said before, he says, the halacha is you're allowed to embark on a journey which will result in Chol Shabbos only Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, not Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, unless it's a mitzvah. For a mitzvah, you can embark on the journey even on Friday itself, even Friday afternoon. So now he says, Ein safek yadosh lo yavriach atzmo yedetistikim in atzava. Not being a draft evader, he says, a draft dodger, is yosher midvar mitzvah. The value of not being a draft dodger is certainly a mitzvah. It's more than a regular mitzvah, he says. Why? Because if someone does this, he'll be garim chil Hashem, imivad hadavar, v'garim ra leYehudim. First of all, it's a chil Hashem. Second of all, it's bad for the Jews. Why? Kisana haYehudim, the anti-Semites will say that the Jews are not civic-minded, the Jews don't follow the law, Yehudim ain't amosim es dasi hamalchus. So, since we've established that someone who travels on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, most poskim say is mutter, even if Olvadi have to mechal Shabbos. And if it's for a mitzvah, he says, then even Arab Shabbos, he says. Im Kain, Kal V'chomer, he says, you're not even volunteering. You're not volunteering here. This is not like the case of Amar Amash, where you're volunteering to serve as a surrogate. You're being drafted. The only question is, should you actively engage in draft evasion to not serve? That's mutter, he says. They're taking you. Certainly you should not do this. He says, because by draft evasion you can cause kalam mechshol and many problems. Sheval taseh b'kan vade adif, take no action, passively allow yourself to be inducted, and so on. Moreover, he says, it's kind of a reductio ad absurdum. He says, imanu nomar d'mechliv l'avriach atzmo, you're asking me this question, should you evade the draft? If I tell you yes, he says, whatever I answer for you will be the same answer for anyone else who asks the question. And he says, most of them won't succeed. Even if an individual here or there can successfully evade the draft, on a wholesale communal level, most Jews are going to fail to do this, and that will lead to certainly a big chilul Hashem. One or two guys might slip through the cracks. They might not get caught. But the whole community is trying to evade the draft. Many of them will not succeed. That will certainly create an egregious chilul Hashem. Asher, his conclusion is, once again, al kein hatov, b'pi melech shmar, the good thing to do is obey the king. Ulay timzachem b'nei asarim, maybe if you cooperate, maybe you'll even get on their good side, and the yinichol lishmar Shabbos, maybe they'll even allow you religious accommodations. They'll let you not serve on Shabbos, then you'll get the best of both worlds. Tas hatov, b'nei alekim v'adam, habalatar m'saylam in Hashemayim, someone who's trying to do the right thing will find himself aided by heaven. So his position is quite close. He doesn't discuss the danger issue at all. He wasn't even getting into the question of danger. He seems to have been taking for granted this was just a kind of national service peacetime draft. And his analysis is really identical to that of the Amar Amash, that you don't have to worry about the Chil Shabbos and the Treif, because basically this is mutter to embark before Shabbos. Although again, the Maramash kind of limited that to Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, didn't get into the question of mitzvah, and he goes even further and says that even if you are volunteering right before Shabbos, that's mutter too, because it's a mitzvah to avoid Chil Hashem and to avoid anti-Semitism, he says, and certainly you're not even volunteering in his case, you're just not taking active steps to evade the draft, therefore he says this is mutter. Chassam Sofer, however, seems to be more stringent. Chassam Sofer thinks that people who volunteer are doing a terrible avera, but even he agrees that once they're doing it, they're going to be hired anyway. You are allowed to hire them, because if it won't be you, it'll be somebody else. I should just point out that Chassam Sofer's position is somewhat problematic, because this question of whether if someone is going to do an avera, if you don't provide him with avera, someone else will. A Jew wants to eat some pork. So he asks you, can I have some pork? If you don't give it to him, we'll buy it from someone else. Are you allowed to give it to him? Many poskim say no. Many poskim say, if he can get pork himself, that thing where it says he'd be allowed to give him. It wouldn't be lefnivah deraisa. But if the only way he can get it is by someone else giving it to him, and that person himself is also Jewish, so one of you are going to be over lefnivah, you can't get out of lefnivah by saying he's going to do it. Because if he doesn't, he'll be over lefnivah. Many achronim say that there's no getting out of lefnivah by saying someone else will be over lefnivah, that you can't do that. So the Chassam Sofer doesn't really address it. He seems to be assuming here that since someone else will do it, there's no lefnivah. But I'll call upon him. He agrees to the Maram Ash that you can do it, although he seems to feel that the volunteer is doing wrong, while the Maram Ash and the Rav Dovitzvi Hafman are assuming that the volunteer, or certainly if you're drafted, and even a volunteer, according to the Maram Ash, is not doing anything wrong because he'll only do what he has to do, and that's mutter because of Bigot Nefesh, like in the case of the boat. Whatever he doesn't have to do, he won't do. And therefore, in principle, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with volunteering to serve in the army, even if that will entail some Chil Shabbos because of Bigot Nefesh.